Everybody, I hope you're doing well. This week I'm so happy to have attorney Daniel Sheehan as my guest for the hour. We started talking at the beginning for the WBAI evening news and talking about Tiger Swan. Then the whole interview just escalated into sort of a history lesson, and basically, it brings us to what's going on right now. And the more I think about everything, it just keeps bringing home to me that Standing Rock was so much more than Standing Rock. Attorney Sheehan's working on the defense of Chase Ionize and the other water protectors, many of whom have been charged with felony, which is it's a total lie. No one did incite a riot. And it's interesting that the government and the courts have been trying to make activists terrorists for years, calling activists terrorists. And some of the latest names that they are calling activists and that they call the water protectors is jihadist. It's just, it's kind of amazing. And there's a funny story that almost relates to that. You know, I was in South Dakota 2 weeks ago, and I saw Cody Hall. It was a thank you ceremony for the water protectors. And I gave Cody a copy of my DVD, Water is Life. And Cody and I were talking about Standing Rock, about what went on there, how much he was followed. He was part of the Red Warrior camp and did a great job. And he was telling me that with the surveillance, they picked up people talking. And one of the things that they picked up when people were talking was saying, we have to load our pipes, meaning we have to load our pipes, our chinupas, for prayer. But Dapple people, and it could have been Tiger Swan as well, we don't know, but took this as meaning that the water protectors have pipe bombs. You know, when you're dealing with people that are run by greed, and even the administration, where it's just about money. It's cutting up Mother Earth, putting in another pipeline, crisscrossing it, more fracking, just sell, 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 get as much as you can, make as much as you can, and don't worry about the ramifications. Well, they can't wrap their head around the fact that a group, a large group of people, a group from around the world, along with the Native nations, came to stand together, and they came peacefully and prayerfully because they came from Mother Earth and they came for the sacred water. And they just had this military force. And now Attorney Sheehan is calling them on that. And this is going to be one really huge case, the case of Chase Ionize and other water protectors. So I really hope you'll enjoy this hour with Attorney Sheehan. The beginning of our interview starts off about Tiger Swan, but it goes from there. And I just would love to give you a little background about Attorney Danny Sheehan, which you probably know, but let's go through it anyway, because this is one amazing person. Daniel Sheehan is a Harvard-trained attorney. Daniel has participated in some of the most important public interest cases of the last 40 years. His lawsuits have involved the Watergate and Iran-Contra scandals, the Pentagon Papers, and the killing of Karen Silkwood. In 1973-74, he served as amicus counsel to the American Civil Liberties Union in regards to the occupation of Wounded Knee. In 1980, he co-founded the Christic Institute, a nonprofit public interest law center that, among many other cases, prosecuted members of the Ku Klux Klan in Greensboro, North Carolina, and represented victims of the Three Mile Island disaster in Pennsylvania. Since 2006, Daniel Sheehan has served as the lead attorney and general counsel for the Lakota People's Law Project, LPLP, and much of LPLP's work has been in South Dakota to stop violations of the Indian Child Welfare Act, ICWA, and rescue Lakota children from an abusive state care system. In 2016, LPLP began organizing around the Dakota Access Pipeline, and the Lakota staff were on the ground at Ocheti Shekone Camp from its inception in April 2016 to the final days in February 2017. Daniel Sheehan is now the head of a legal team representing Chase Iron Eyes and others facing felony charges related to the No DAPL movement. So here's Danny Sheehan for the hour. Please enjoy. Thank you. So, I mean, essentially, what role did Tiger Swan play at Standing Rock? And when did this information come out that they were the people that were involved in instigation and in just activities there and posing as water protectors?
Well, we knew about this. Because our Lakota People's Law Office, that is an integrated auxiliary of the Romero Institute, is the progeny of the Christic Institute from Washington, D.C., who did the major Iran-Contra case. And we did the Karen Silkwood case, and we did the civil rights prosecution against the Klan and Nazis down in Greensboro, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. We have a long history of knowing about these private organizations that work in tandem with law enforcement and conduct unlawful activities, which the state has already been prohibited from engaging in. And they think that the private parties, such as Tiger Swan or the Law Enforcement Intelligence Unit or these other types of private organizations that go about doing these things, can basically engage in the same kind of conduct that the FBI and the state bureaus of special services used to engaging in political surveillance and disruption of First Amendment activities that had been deemed illegal by the federal courts. So as soon as we saw these people show up as part of the security, we said, wait a second, who are these people? And we realized that it was Tiger Swan. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we realized that it was Tiger Swan, we had our investigators confirm that James Reese, who's the CEO of Tiger Swan, used to be a major paid contractor for Blackwater International. And we were very familiar through Jeremy Scahill's work and others at Intercept about Blackwater. We're very familiar with lots of people who work for Blackwater. My investigators, a lot of them are professional former criminal investigators for various military branches, Marine Corps and Air Force OSI, and also U.S. Army CID. So they're very familiar with a lot of the personnel that are involved and what their backgrounds are. And so we immediately began an investigation of them, and we were preparing a major portion of the defense of Chase Iron Eyes, who is the single person from the Lakota Nation who has been charged with inciting the entire insurrection against the state of North Dakota.
So wrong.
Basically, which is how they're characterizing this. And we right away smelled the breath of Tiger Swan involved in this and characterizing all of our people as terrorists and jihadists. We knew what they were doing. We saw when they were deploying, we saw this as a full-scale readiness exercise. It's very reminiscent of an old exercise called Operation Cable Splicer.
What is
that? It was undertaken under Ronald Reagan. It was a major covert operation that was undertaken to link together all of the federal anti-terrorist forces, along with state BCIs, the Bureau of Criminal Investigation, state police, sheriff's departments, city police departments, et cetera, and private security companies to link them all together. I.e. cable splicing all of them together to function as one smooth operation, functioning under a centralized command That particular episode was undertaken to pursuant to a readiness exercise to defend against the anti-Vietnam War movement joining forces with the black nationalists to attempt to overthrow the state of California, which is part of what their scenarios are. They have these war game scenarios. And we were very familiar with this Operation Garden plot. There were a whole series of these readiness exercises. It's a template that these right wing people have in their heads. And what they do is they say, look, if we were these other people, what would we be doing?
Right.
And so then they roll that out as a scenario and attribute it to our people and then set up a defense against it. And so we recognized what they were up to. So we began the investigation right away, and we're developing information from inside what was going on there. And then we learned that Intercept had acquired some 100 pages of internal Tiger Swan documents. And so we immediately established contact with the Intercept and began sharing information that we had. They did the Freedom of Information Act actions to get additional data, and then they began to publish their stories. They published a three-part series about Tiger Swan and their activities here at Standing Rock. We have acquired access to substantial additional amounts of information from inside sources about what they were doing through our investigators. And we're in the process of putting together a major affirmative defense on behalf of Chase Iron Eyes, charging them with a conspiracy, a criminal conspiracy, to deprive the water protectors of their constitutional rights, mm-hmm. predicated upon religious prejudice and ethnic prejudice, because they were characterizing our people as religiously driven jihadists, basically associating them with the indigenous uprising that Steve Bannon has been talking about. Steve Bannon, who, as you know, is the major political strategist for the Trump administration, has characterized the Native people here as part of a global insurrection on the part of the indigenous people against Christianity and capitalism.
I didn't realize it went that far with Steve Bannon. I didn't realize he said it was against Christianity and capitalism. Holy smoke.
Yes. Yep. That's how he's characterized. And so, and it's religiously driven and racially motivated. So that's what we're asserting, that our people took the steps that they took because it was necessary to protect all of their people and their water mm-hmm. against this criminal conspiracy to basically inflict massive disabling effects upon them, injuries upon them, because they were deemed to be insurrectionists and terrorists. And so ours is the flagship case raising these issues. And so that we're the ones working on running these investigations, and we'll be conducting, I dare say, a good portion of the discovery against Tiger Swan.
Wow. And if people want to see the article from The Intercept, it's also on LakotaLaw.org, is it not? The three parts
of
it.
Yeah.
Couple of questions for you. When did you discover that they were involved? What month was that?
Well, it was November. November. Right around mm-hmm. all the activities of November 20th.
So I
recognized these guys right away, and I said, okay, let's get to it and start doing this investigation.
That's excellent.
And it was later that the Intercept people got the documents and started their series.
And when did it start where the government was so against people with different views, people that want to make a difference? It clearly, you know, we could say it's the era of Trump, but this started way ahead. And you mentioned Reagan, but then you mentioned Vietnam mm-hmm. as well. So how long has this been going on?
Well, actually, that's part of our discussions that we've been engaged in here over when how far back are we planning to go to present this evidence to the jury about this type of intermingling of the interests of the private corporations with the instrumentalities of the state? You know, and the fact of the matter is that it goes all the way back to the robber baron era, when they basically commandeered control over the American foreign policy and had the administrations, for example, of McKinley, you know, sending gunships and stuff into Nicaragua and, you know, in military operations, the commandant of the United States Marine Corps being sent in with a foreign military expeditionary force on behalf of United Fruit in Nicaragua and other places around the world. But what we're focusing on the specifics of the oil corporations taking over the foreign policy of the United States. And this really begins basically after World War One, with the Churchill Commission superimposing the artificial nation state boundaries on people, the tribal people of the Middle East, you know, that have been there for thousands of years as a tribal culture, and superimposing upon them these artificial, you know, rectangular nation state boundaries, and saying this is Libya and this is Jordan and here is Saudi Arabia and here's what we're going to call Iran and this is going to be Iraq, you know, and they did that completely ignoring the thousands of year old tribal boundaries and relationships, and did it primarily to try to divvy up the oil in there to establish protectorates of the various nations that had prevailed in World War One. And there's an entire history of this. Chalmers Johnson has a book that's called The Sorrows of Empire that talks about this history at some length. There's another a very well-known book called The Prize that Daniel Yergin did. It's called The Quest for Oil, Money, and Power. And it's a whole tracking of how the petroleum industry has taken over control of the American foreign policy to maintain monopoly control over the oil. And this is a major issue because Tiger Swan and, of course, earlier Blackwater have been called in by the oil corporations in the Middle East, basically. The invasion of the Middle East that was initiated by George Bush Sr. and his Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney, you know, to occupy the Middle Eastern oil fields, basically in the immediate anticipation of the collapse of the Soviet Union, is what has triggered this whole set of events that we see happening with the invasion and occupation of the Middle East, Eastern oil fields, and the training up of Blackwater International, hired by Halliburton and Bechtel and others to do the major security for them. They're all former special forces. They're all Special Forces United States military people that, you know, we spend tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars training each one of these Special Forces people to deal with these kind of things. And they then serve one tour and then they get hired by these private corporations and hire out to the oil companies to protect them. And that's the kind of thing that we're seeing, that virtually all of these people that are working for Tiger Swan here in North Dakota.
Yeah.
Worked, you know, were trained by the United States military to militarily occupy Middle Eastern countries, nation states, and to protect the oil pipelines and stuff against the indigenous population. And that's how they've come to experience these people, the indigenous people, as enemies and hostiles to the pipeline. In the pipe into the interests and reputation of the oil corporations. And that's the mission that they've identified for themselves here, Tiger Swan, is to protect not only the equipment and the drilling of the pipeline and the pipeline itself, but also to, quote, protect the reputation of the oil corporation, which is then they've engaged in this major, what they call a public diplomacy campaign.
Diplomacy.
Public diplomacy campaign to basically sow lies and the propaganda in all of the major news media, to poison the minds of the people in the community, to basically poison the minds of law enforcement, to distort the vision of what the people are like, who are peaceful and prayerful protesters.
Right.
You know, characterizing them as violent jihadists. You know, and this is what we're facing here. That because the American people have acquiesced to having this kind of training going on in the deployment of these forces in the Middle East, and then later on in Africa on behalf of Royal Dutch Shell, and down in Central America on behalf of Exxon, you know, where they're destroying the water of these people with the petroleum corporations are poisoning the water of all the people in those areas, those indigenous people. And then when the indigenous people rise up to protest, they bring in these former U.S. Army Special Forces people, now hired by Tiger Swan and Blackwater and these other private security corporations, to basically suppress the people, to infiltrate them, to disempower them, to spread lies and rumors about them in the media, and to treat them as terrorists, basically, and to conduct themselves toward these people as though those people were terrorists. And to engage in electronic surveillance, they penetrate them with agents provocateur.
Yep.
They actually engage in destructive activities against some minor aspects of the oil corporations, and then blame it on the local indigenous people so they can justify, you know, engaging in violence against them. You know, because our American people acquiesced in that type of conduct being done in foreign countries, it's now come home to roost. So here they are now. They're facing us now in North Dakota, assembled across the hilltops, you know, like U.S. cavalry, you know,
yep.
All decked out in with major Bearcats. And instead of having 50 caliber machine guns on their turrets, they've got these 1,000-pound per square inch water cannons and rubber bullets and concussion grenades and tear gas and dogs.
And LRADs, yeah.
Sticking dogs on people.
Yeah.
So that's what we're looking at right here. And people can experience it here in North Dakota because of the poison propaganda campaign that they've been engaged in self-consciously and fully trained by the United States military to have engaged in that conduct. They've poisoned the well here, as it were, on the part of the population. So you have like a 91% level of prejudice against the water protectors, people here believing that they're terrorists.
Because they don't get the truth.
Or that they engaged in violent activity against the police, which is not true.
No, it's not true at all. You know, it's not funny, haha, but it's a curious thing. I was talking to Cody Hall maybe about a week or two ago, and he was saying that they said we had pipe bombs because they overheard us talking about filling the pipes. Filling the chinupa, right? You know?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
No, every single thing is prismed by them through this
their
anti-terrorist
eyes.
Lens.
Yes.
And so that they are misinterpreting things and they are intentionally distorting things. And they're taking any kind of quote out of context. They're they're taking partial quotes and jamming them into what sound like a terrorist scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even to the point they're sending dump trucks onto the site of Ocechi Sokoan and dumping the garbage onto the site. We've got videotape of them doing it and then broadcasting and saying, look at all the junk that's all on the ground. The people are contaminating the whole area that can contaminate the river. You know what I mean? Which they're the ones threatening to contaminate the river. That our people were being extremely assiduous about picking up any waste, you know, and processing all of it out and having a completely clean site. And they end up bringing dump trucks on and dumping it and then videotaping it and saying, look what the people are doing. This is the tactics that have been developed by these people in the United States Special Forces against indigenous people in the Middle East and in Africa and in Central America, all on behalf of the oil corporations. And now they're doing it here. That's why this case in North Dakota is so important, because it is a microcosm here in the United States of the macrocosm of the project that they've been engaged in around the world for the last, you know, 50 years.
Wow. It's huge. I mean, I thought I was going to talk to you about Standing Rock and how they started following water protectors to the other camps. I didn't realize the depth. I also didn't realize how long this has been going on.
I mean, it's over a century, but in this capacity, more like 50 years. Wow.
Yeah, they've professionalized this now.
Yeah.
Because the special forces that had been developed primarily under Kennedy, you know, to be operative in Vietnam, were basically mobilized to go into the Middle East by George Bush Sr. When he learned in June of 1991 that it was likely the Soviet Union was going to be dissolving in December. What he did is he mounted a major project to basically instigate Saddam Hussein to send military troops into Kuwait and then used it as a rationale to send U.S. military forces into the Middle East to occupy the Middle Eastern oil fields and then to drive Saddam Hussein back into Iraq and set up a no-fly zone, which just coincidentally required 250,000 United States military to be there on a permanent basis to maintain the no-fly zone. A ridiculous proposition, which was in fact an occupation, a U.S. military occupation of the Middle Eastern oil fields at the end of the Cold War. And it's just a huge reality facing everybody directly in the face and people not seeing it, mainly because the American news media are not reporting it as such. That's not how they're reporting this. All they're doing is focusing on embedding with individual military forces that are going into areas where, strangely enough, they're being shot at by people who have had their families killed, you know, participating in a wedding, you know.
Yeah.
And so the people are rising up against them. And so that's what our American news media video. They say, look, here's our boys and girls abroad protecting liberty and our way of life, which entails the massive dependence on oil.
And here we are. I mean, something like Standing Rock was the complete push to get away. I mean, Standing Rock was more than water. I mean, water is life, mini Wichoni, and. I mean, Standing Rock was about alternative energies, looking to the future.
That's right.
Yeah, with renewables. That's right. And it was about tribal rights and the right to be on that land as well.
Yeah, and it still is.
Yes.
It still is because, you know, they're trying to criminally prosecute over 800 people. And they've mounted up this huge operation here in North Dakota, hired older retired judges. They brought in, you know, major new people in their law enforcement. And it's all under the whip hand of Tiger Swan saying, look, you cannot, in fact, just allow these people to walk away who did this demonstration. You have to prosecute them aggressively and vigorously, and you need to punish them. This needs to be a signal that is being sent out across the country, you know, against anybody who tries to organize and protest against this massive increase on the part of the Trump administration of the development of coal and oil in fracking natural gas. I mean, he might just well have been hired by the oil companies.
Absolutely.
You know, he's got his Secretary of State Tillman, the CEO of ExxonMobil. He's got his energy secretary, Rick Perry, who was a vice president of Sunoco Logistics, one of the partners here in the Energy Transfer Partners. And he's got his head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, who is a major opponent in the state of Oklahoma of people who are protesting the oil development in Oklahoma. And just this morning, we have on MSNBC Trump posing, taking pictures with, you know, tribal representatives who are signing on to allowing the reservations now to be open by the Trump administration for massive exploitation of oil and coal and in natural gas
that
had heretofore been prohibited. And now he's going to be opening them all up along with the national parks for massive oil exploration. I mean, how obvious does it have to get? You know, people keep saying, oh, gee, if I had lived back in Germany back in the 1920s and 30s, I would have seen this coming and I would have taken a stand against it. But they didn't then, and they aren't doing it now.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I have been in Germany, and there was some people that said, yes, we did. I mean, I was in like München in Munich, and people saying,
we
did.
Yeah, the White Rose.
Yeah, we did stand against it, but I guess it wasn't strong enough. But now, wow, I didn't see that this morning. I just, missed the news altogether this morning.
That's what they're doing. And it's all part of a propaganda campaign to try to neutralize the defense that we're going to be raising here in North Dakota. So they're going to be going around trying to say, oh, look, we have representatives, quote, of the Native nations who are all joining in wanting to have the oil and natural gas exploited on their reservation.
No way.
So it's going to give them great employment opportunities. It's such utter bull.
Yep. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org online.
I mean, it's complete exploitation. You know, and they're going to try to get those tribal councils that are a creation of the federal government, in which, you know, less than 10% of the people participate in voting for these tribal councils because they're complete government tools. You know, and that they're going to try to get them to sign up for contracts to allow the oil corporations and coal companies to come in and destroy their reservations.
Can this,
you know,
even,
I mean, and that's what they're doing.
Can this even happen in the tribal nations that are strong? I mean, the Havasupai seem pretty strong. I mean, they're going against uranium mining now, the Lakota Nation, but it's so huge. I don't know, and you don't know who infiltrates the tribal councils.
No. The bottom line is that, as is always true, that the major tool or the major weapon or the major device that can be utilized against this type of activity is raising the consciousness of the people to educate the people about what it is that's going on. And you have to first accurately characterize what it is that's happening. You know, when you have a president who says, oh, listen, this was the biggest inauguration crowd in the history.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it is like one third of what was there for Obama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just complete lies. There's no connection to the truth whatsoever. They just sort of put out this pablum. They put out the framing in a way that they want it to be, and then they just keep saying it over and over and over again. You know, it's like saying that, you know, I won the fight. You know, I dropped my groin on his knee, and I forced my chin into his fist. You know, and then they're trying to say, you won the fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just completely ridiculous. I mean, you know, it's a complete and total distortion of reality, which, of course, makes it sinful. That's what this is. This is the classic definition in the Greek of sinfulness. It's being completely contrary to truth. You know, that's what this is. It's a malevolent, evil force that is rooted and predicated upon power and greed. And it's the men who have learned to forge the beauty of our planet into power.
That's exactly right. And that's so well put. Attorney Sheehan, where do you see this going?
Well, we're mounting the defenses here. And we're planning to, you know, make this known to the people around the country and around the world to show them what they have in store for them if they do not rise up. Now, you remember the famous Niemöller quotes in Germany, you know, that, oh, well, first they came for the communists, and I was not a communist, so I did nothing. Then they came for the socialists, and I was not a socialist, so I did nothing. Then they came for the labor union people, and I was not a labor union person, so I did nothing. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to help me. You know, I mean, they've come for the Native American people once again, like they have, to come for their resources. And the American people need to wake up and need to stand up and stand with the indigenous people, not with their tribal council people. You know, if they do not help the people and do not defend the people, you know, if those tribal councils succumb to the temptation of being offered bribes in payment from the federal government to say, here, we'll pay everybody on the tribal council, you know, $10,000 if you'll vote to allow the oil company to come in and exploit the oil on your reservation, you know, and they all drive away with a new pickup truck and, you know, and they sign away the rights of the people, you know.
Yeah.
There has to be a rising up of the people against that type of manipulation of the tribal councils to get the honest people. There are honest people on the tribal council, some of them.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, a number of the traditional people have agreed to finally run for those offices, even though they view the tribal council as a neo-colonial institution created by the United States government back in 1934 under the Indian Reorganization Act. And most of the traditional people refused to have anything whatsoever to do with the tribal council because of that. But the people have been successful in getting traditional people to run and to try to utilize that instrumentality to help people. But, you know, they need to assert, the people need to rise up and assert control over those tribal councils and not allow them to serve as the lackeys of the oil industry, which, you know, in this administration, run by and dominated by and led by the oil corporations. It's just transparent. It's never going to be any more obvious than this. You know, if we're going to be able to successfully defend our democratic institutions, now is the hour, because it's never going to be made more obvious than this. And if the people can't see it now, they're going to remain blind until it's way too late. But I don't believe that's going to happen. I believe the people are going to wake up. I think the people are going to see. I think the people are going to observe the trials. They're going to be done here in North Dakota. They're going to put these issues to the juries, to put these issues to the people of North Dakota, who are being exploited by these oil corporations. Their water is being destroyed. You know, the Baca up there, you know, my wife, Sarah Nelson, you know, of 40 years, who's, you know, who's the executive director of our Romero Institute. She was born and raised in Stanley, North Dakota. The place has been totally trashed. You know, all the water has been contaminated by the fracking. You know, they're pouring poisons into the ground to frack the natural gases out of there. They're pumping oil everywhere you look. Our oil derricks everywhere. They're despoiling the entire state, and they're going to leave all of these pipelines in the ground to decay and rot and spew the poison into their water table, you know, over the next 20 to 50 years.
Yeah,
and
you know,
it's destroying their entire state, and they're paying people here pennies on the dollar for their oil rights to under their land, and the people are ecstatic about getting a few pennies, you know, per barrel, you know, for the oil being taken out of here just exactly like the people in the Middle East were exploited, where, you know, they came in at the end of World War One, and they signed all of these contracts they put potentates in charge of each of those countries. 1922, there was a major commission that was chaired by Churchill, who was at that time, 1922, the Minister for Colonial Affairs of the United Kingdom. And he chaired a 20-person commission, and they drafted these boundaries and superimposed those nation-state boundaries on the tribal territory, and then later divided up all those trust territories to the nation-states, and then assigned a potentate to go in, like the House of Saud in Saudi Arabia, and the Kuwaiti royal family in Kuwait, and the Pahlavis in Iran. They imposed a king on those people. It was a European, totally non-traditional, non-tribal, non-aboriginal system. They imposed a king on each of those countries, and then they made a private deal with the family of the king that they would give them like 10% of the royalties personally to their family, you know, in exchange for them signing a 60-year exclusive lease agreement with the seven oil companies they call the Seven Sisters. Aramco, the Arab American Oil Corporation, you know, that has a BP in it and Exxon Mobil and Standard Oil, you know, they're all there, and they have exclusive control over that, all the oil in the Middle East. And that was all renewed back in 1972 by Richard Nixon and Kissinger. So they renewed the 60-year lease agreements with those royalist families. And then they used the money to buy military equipment from United States military industries to keep themselves in power, you know, against their own people. I mean, and they're total authoritarians. That's what you see happening in the Middle East right now. And the people, with the Soviet Union dissolved, the people started rising up to throw off all of those foreign potentates. And that's what you see happening. That's the springtime, you know, in the Middle East. And none of the national media are interpreting it that way. None of them are showing the people of the world what's really happening, you know, mainly because the major media are owned by many of the same corporations.
Yeah.
Literally. That's owned by the same corporation.
Yeah, like five of them, right?
General Electric. General Electric owns NBC. You know, they make the jet engines for the F-15s and stuff that are all being sold to all of those Saudi Arabian and Middle Eastern princes. You got ABC is owned by Cap City. The chairman of the board of Cap City was the head of the Central Intelligence Agency, Bill Casey. Wake up. I mean, it's time for people to wake up to understand. Now, our job is to get this explained, not as a drink out of the fire hose for the American people that are just can't even comprehend how all this can be going on. Our responsibility is to take it step by step, show them step by step in a concrete, specific instance what this looks like and what this means on a strategic, tactical, and logistical level. And that's our job. And that's what the Christic Institute has done for years. We did it in the Karen Silkwood case and stopped the construction of all private nuclear power plants in the country from 1979 to the present. That's what we did in the Iran-Contra case and stopped the shipment of military equipment to the Contras by the covert enterprise of Theodore Shockley in the Bush administration. That's what we've done down through the years. We did the first American sanctuary defense to reveal what was going on. The United States Central Intelligence Agency was training the death squads in Guatemala and El Salvador, in that the Catholic Church, in the Methodist Church, had come to the aid of the people by setting up the Underground Railroad to help people escape from those tyrannies to come to the United States and seek political refugee status. That's what we do. That's why we're here. We've been here for 14 years in the state of North Dakota and South Dakota, working to stop the states from taking the Native American children away from their parents and their tribes and putting them in all white run group home foster care settings, and then dosing them with major pharmaceuticals for the pharmaceutical industry. We've been here working on this thing for 14 years. So that's why we were asked to come in and help on this thing, to be able to provide some sort of strategic perspective on what it is that's happening here.
You are doing amazing work. And one other question, where do the rights of the tribal nations come in the world court? Because it seems that they do have a direct relation that goes with the federal government. But if the federal government is not listening to them, then can they take this to the world court for their rights, for the rights of their land?
Well, it's an interesting question. When I graduated from Harvard Law School in 1970, I went and interviewed with the United Nations. And what they told me is, don't bother right now. They said, we are still very much in the earliest possible stages of developing juridical institutions that have any kind of enforceability. And, there's important steps that have been taken: the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People,
yes,
the Declaration of Human Rights, the establishment of the World Court. But, the fact of the matter is that the development of these types of juridical institutions is still in its infancy. And therefore, to bring a case in the World Court, for example, each of the nation states has to consent to jurisdiction. And so whenever the United States gets caught in a situation where they're doing something that is in violation of their international agreements, they just refuse to consent to having any jurisdiction in the world court, and you can't litigate against them. They know perfectly well they would lose. Very, very rare instances that Abe Shea, one of my law professors from Harvard Law School, actually initiated the case on behalf of the Nicaraguan government, the Sandinista government, that convicted the Contras of mining the harbors, international harbors in Nicaragua, and they were found to be international outlaws. And for that reason, we got Congress then to pass the Boland Amendment prohibiting the granting of any aid, either direct or indirect, to the Contras under Anastasio Somoza. So there are rare instances in which you can win a case like that, but they're extraordinarily rare. And so that I fully appreciate the efforts on the part of people, Phyllis Young and the people from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Council and others that are trying to invoke assistance from the international tribunals. We've had the United Nations inspectors come in,
yes,
and inspect the taking of all the children. The state of South Dakota's Department of Social Services was taking 742 Native kids a year.
Whoa.
Away from their, not only away from their parents, but away from their grandparents and their aunties and uncles, from their tribe, from their entire culture,
their life,
and placing them in all white settings. You know, and that it took us the full 8 years of the Obama administration to get them to finally file a federal lawsuit, you know, against the state of South Dakota. And to file an amicus brief, we got the American Civil Liberties Union to come in and file a major lawsuit declaring it to be illegal what the state was doing. And we got the United States Justice Department Civil Rights Division to write an amicus brief in support of that. Very important. And then we got the United States Justice Department to file a federal lawsuit suing the state of South Dakota and their Department of Social Services for systematic racial discrimination against Native people. You know, so we've succeeded in doing this, but it took 8 years. And now you look at this administration, of the Trump administration, there is no chance whatsoever that the Justice Department under Jeff Sessions is going to do anything like that. You know, he's devoting, as of this morning, putting in a whole task force to try to enforce the laws against medical marijuana. That's their agenda. You know, they're not going to protect Native American people, nor the civil rights of anybody.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You know, and so you know, the people have to get that administration out of power as fast as they possibly can. They have to get a new Congress elected in 2018. They've got to go after this gerrymandering that's going on, where the Republicans are icing out even Democrats, to say nothing of independents or anybody that's really going to take a legitimate stand on anything. You know, so the American people need to rise up. We're still in a situation where we can, through the legitimate legal channels, rise up and mobilize. And we can educate ourselves, we can mobilize, we can organize, we can conscientize other people around the world and in our country, and we can rise up and take control of our government back, you know, or take it perhaps for the first time, more
yeah.
to the point. But it's still available, you know, and people who are further to the left than I am, which are a considerable number of people, you know, view this as a bit naive to believe that we can actually succeed in utilizing the tools of democracy still. They believe that it's a hypocritical promise that has not ever been intended to be kept, you know, but I've been able to demonstrate in the past over all the years. You can get the courts, for example, to allow the New York Times to publish the Pentagon Papers right on the front pages of the New York Times. We've been able to get the courts to support the right of journalists to protect their confidential news sources, even against the power of the state, demanding their information from grand juries. You know, we've been successful over and over and over and over again in showing that there are some advances that can still be made within the legal structures, and we need to do those. You know, and there are other people who think that this is naive and that there needs to be more aggressive and actual revolutionary activity undertaken, that I believe in exhausting all of the available administrative remedies before people resort to action like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to be aware of the fact that action like that is available. You know, if in fact we exhaust every last effort to try to get the legal system to respond pursuant to its promises set forth in the Constitution, in the Declaration, if they refuse to stop accommodating the interests of the corporations, and in this particular case, the oil corporations, you know, people are going to have no alternative but to resort to some alternatives in order to get this stopped. We're being confronted by global climate change, which is threatening the entire our entire human civilization, and these people are just merrily going along pursuing their short-term profits. So there needs to be extremely radical action taken, and we need to undertake every last legal measure that can be undertaken against them. And we've undertaken to do this in North Dakota, and we're going to try to demonstrate to the world that it's still possible within the democratic institutions and the constitutional framework we have here to bring about radical reform.
Oh, goodness. Godspeed, that's for sure. Is this, I mean, I guess it's not even necessary to say it, but this must be the most difficult political environment you've had to deal with.
Oh, we've been other places.
Oh, other places around the world.
We defended the first elected black mayor down in the deep delta of Mississippi against the first degree murder charge, you know, where we were faced with a jury panel made up of 80 white people and only 20 black people, you know, and we ended up getting an acquittal of him and catching the persons who did the murder, actually. But, you know, our second child, Dagan, took his first steps in a little farmhouse down in Mississippi with the Ku Klux Klan, you know, driving their cars in circles around the house, honking and turning their lights on and off at the nighttime. You know, so we've been in hostile territory before. But in this case, I want to bring this case in front of a jury because, as strange as it sounds, when you bring the cases right in the heart of the beast, the fact of the matter is you start out with the advantage that everybody who's on the jury knows that what you're telling them is true.
Yeah.
It's just hard to get them to do anything about it, you know?
Yeah,
At least you start out with the advantage of them knowing what you're telling them is true. And then you have to work to get them to understand the value of the Constitution, the value of the basic ethical principles that are taught by our Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and get them to support it. You know, I tried a case up in Idaho for the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of United Artists, you know, a case against an obscenity charge against the movie The Last Tango in Paris by Bertolucci, Marlon Brando's movie.
Yeah.
You know, it was nominated for several Academy Awards, and they were going to lock up the theater manager for showing the film.
Oh, man.
And, you know, they sent police out to stand in front of the ticket booth and take Polaroid photographs of every person who bought a ticket and made them show them their ID. And then they went into the theater and seized the film right off the projector and locked it up in the safe of the district attorney. And then we had to go on trial in front of a judge who was the president of the Mormon stake, one third of the state, and an entire Mormon jury, a complete 12-person jury made up of members of the Church of the Latter-day Saints.
Whoa.
And he was acquitted.
Oh, you know? Gosh, that's
so
amazing.
Because people ultimately believe in the legitimacy of the constitutional principles, and they don't have to deal with them in their daily life. They're kind of an abstraction. But when it becomes a concrete reality and they're in the jury box and they're faced with the reality of having, you know, finding themselves basically in a movie, as far as they're concerned, you know, this is the biggest event in their life. And they're being called upon to engage in a heroic act of protecting the Constitution of the United States against its domestic enemies. And these people, make no mistake about it, these owners and decision makers in the oil corporations are the enemies of the American people and the people of the world. They are threatening the existence of our human civilization solely for their own personal greed. And, you know, they need to be stopped. And we're going to undertake every last legal measure that we have available to us to stop these people and put them out of business, and to bring in alternative energy sources that can save our planet and save our human civilization. And the question that arises is it worth saving? Is our human family worthy of being saved from our own self-destruction?
Hopefully we'll step up to that.
I believe
we
are. I believe we are. And I believe that the people will rise to the occasion because the consequences are too severe if we don't.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, Attorney Sheehan, we're just about out of time, but it's an honor and a privilege to speak with you.
Well, it's an honor and a privilege to get to be here with
you
and to get to talk to the people.
Say that once you knew for sure, now you're walking in the shore,
to wonder. The more you learn, the less you know. The more you move, the more you go to nowhere. Ask a bird as she flies by just where she's at, and she says where the wind blows. Ask her by that what she means, she says she doesn't know. But as she flew away, she seemed to say the wind.
Attorney Daniel Sheehan. You can find him at LakotaLaw.org. And thank you to the people that make this possible. Thank you to Artie and Pilar at Lakota Law. Thank you, engineer Sean Rhodes. Thank you, engineer Reggie Johnson. To everybody, thank you for listening. See you next week. It's Earth Mom over, out, later. Be well, guys.